Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, March 3rd, 2014. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, Joint Finance Appropriations Committee votes for 1% raises for Idaho teachers. Idaho House passes income tax relief plan that will likely be bottled up in Senate committee. Idaho Fish and Game kills 23 Lolo wolves. Well, details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Interstate 90 is closed westbound between St. Regis, Montana and the Idaho state line due to avalanche danger. Westbound travelers are being diverted towards Highway 200 at St. Regis, and most traffic heading west is going through Sandpoint for the time being. The Montana Department of Transportation has cleared six small avalanches from the roadway, but slopes above the interstate still have unstable snow. Snoqualmie Pass in western Washington was closed for a time this morning due to heavy snow, but it has reopened. Traction tires are advised on Snoqualmie Pass. The 68-year-old Missoula woman who was rescued when an avalanche destroyed her two-story house Friday has died. Michelle Colville was buried for 2 hours Friday until rescuers found her in an air pocket created by the house's fallen chimney. Colville's husband, 68-year-old Fred Allendorf, remains in the hospital in serious condition. The U.S. Forest Service Avalanche Center report says a snowboarder on Mount Jumbo in Missoula triggered the landslide that roared into the neighborhood Friday. The report says the snowboarder was in an area of the mountain closed to recreational use. The Avalanche Center said the section of Mount Jumbo that was closed is closed each year between December 1st and March 15th to provide winter range for elk. The mayor of Missoula closed all of Mount Jumbo Saturday. Mount Jumbo is the mountain with the letter M on it, whose steep slopes abut the University of Montana campus and nearby neighborhoods. 8-year-old Phoenix Scholes Coburn, who was playing outside the house, was rescued after being buried for 2 hours and was released from the hospital today. His sister, 10-year-old Carol Scholes Coburn, who was nearby, was able to dig herself out of the snow when the avalanche hit. The Idaho House voted 54-13 today in favor of a bill reducing income taxes. Even though Senate Local Government Affairs and Taxation Committee Chair Jeff Sidaway has said he won't hold a hearing on the bill. The bill would lower the tax rate for individuals and corporations by a tenth of a percent per year for 6 years. The incremental decreases based on percentage of income will help the wealthiest Idahoans the most. The top tax rate would go down from 7.4% to 6.8%. Sidaway said he won't allow the bill to move forward through his committee because he is in favor of a plan to further increase the property tax exemption on business equipment, a change that also tends to favor the wealthy by putting more of the burden for infrastructure on sales taxes unless school districts and local governments can pass property tax increases. Arguments in favor of the bill, co-sponsored by House Speaker Scott Bedke of Oakley and House Majority Leader Mike Moyle of Starr, centered on making the state competitive with other nearby states. Moyle said, "One of the problems that we have is that our income tax and our corporate tax are on the high end of things." However, the Idaho State Tax Commission released an annual report in October stating Idaho's tax burden is 49th out of 50 states and the District of Columbia. The Idaho Joint Finance Appropriations Committee voted 15-5 today to recommend a 1% across-the-board pay increase for teachers, before the Joint Committee voted, Democratic Representative Shirley Ringo of Moscow, a former school teacher, made a motion for a 1.5% raise for teachers.
Since the downturn in the economy, we've made some significant changes to the state salary schedule that goes out to districts to pay teachers, administrators, and classified. We have reduced the base pay, which affects the amount that goes out for every single teacher, ultimately by 8.35%, and that still stands. We have taken steps to freeze steps for education, for experience. Some of those have been, well, all of those have been restored, but when they are restored, it's a move forward. It's not making up for what was lost. So I did provide all of you some information that showed just one position on the salary schedule where the total loss in pay over the years was over $27,000, which amounts to significantly more than half of a year's pay. So the point is that all the teachers have felt the bite of those changes, every single one of them. In some cases, the individual districts raised their property taxes to help alleviate that situation, but it has had a widespread effect on all the teachers. Another thing that I think is really important here is that the main motion increases that lowest teacher's pay, which currently is $31,000, by 2.4%. So those individuals are getting a 2.4% increase in salary, while everyone else in the main motion is getting only 1%. So I guess some of us think that's fair. I would like to point out that the top number on our state salary schedule is only $15,537 more than that lowest teacher's pay. And the cost in college credits to move from the beginning to the end could be as much as $23,472. So that's considerably more in the cost of education credits to move to the top of the salary schedule than the raise. So the teachers have made it clear that it was important to them to get 1.5% increase on the base. They've made that clear all the way along. To me, it would be important to recognize that in our motion, and my motion does. Let's keep in mind that although we do have money in there for the premium bonus, for the premium leadership system, those are bonuses. Those are not permanent increases in pay. They're bonuses and not available to everybody. So there's not a huge difference in the numbers between my motion and the main motion, but I think it speaks volumes in terms of our values.
Democratic Representative Shirley Ringo of Moscow speaking to JFAC today in Boise. Ringo's motion went down to a defeat on a 16-4 vote. The Joint Finance Appropriations Committee then passed the original motion for a 1% teacher's pay increase by a 15-5 vote. Another Republican has announced a run for the open Superintendent of Public Instruction seat. Melba School District Superintendent Andy Grover told a Capitol News conference Friday he would make implementing the 20 recommendations from Governor Otter's Education Improvement Task Force a priority if elected. Grover will run against Mountain Home Administrator Sherry Ibarra, American Falls Middle School Principal Randy Jensen, and Cottonwood School Teacher John Anan in the May Republican primary. The only Democrat in the race so far is former Chief Deputy to former Superintendent of Public Instruction Marilyn Howard, Jana Jones. Jones, who is from Idaho Falls, got 49% of the vote against current Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Luna in the 2006 election for that post. A Rosalia-based nurse practitioner who had her license yanked by the State Department of Health last month said some pharmacists in the Spokane area refused to fill her prescriptions for painkillers. Practitioner Susan Bowen Small, who ran the now-closed Rosalia Health Clinic, said health officials did not take into account her work trying to wean patients off addictive narcotic pain medications and disregarded the fact she accepted many low-income patients that other clinics wouldn't take. The State Department of Health revoked Bowen Small's license after three of her patients died of drug overdoses. Bowen Small told the Spokesman Review, "I would tell everyone when they came in, I am not a pain doctor, I am a primary care provider doctor, and in that, I want you to get better to take care of yourself." Regarding pharmacists who wouldn't fill her prescriptions, Bowen Small said, "It seemed to me they thought I didn't know what I was doing. I thought that they thought I was some young thing that had never had experience with doing what I was doing." Bowen Small said her tiny clinic conducted regular urine tests to find out which patients were mixing medications or abusing other substances and refused service to 200 patients that were found to be abusing their prescriptions. She said, "One of my patients that died, I asked him how often he was taking his insulin, and he admitted to me probably half of the time." She said almost all of her patients were low income and on some sort of low income health insurance plan or Medicaid or Medicare. She said she wrote a letter to the state saying she and her staff of three were having a hard time getting expensive drug treatments paid for by the state, and the staff were spending, quote, a huge amount of unwarranted hours, unquote, trying to get things authorized. An Idaho Fish and Game spokesperson says the agency did not release information about its plan to kill numerous wolves in the Lolo hunting zone using a helicopter because of safety concerns. Fish and Game spokesperson Mike Keckler told the Lewiston Tribune the department thought it was best to carry out the actions and then notify the public about it. The agency killed 23 wolves during the last month using a helicopter. They have killed a total of 48 wolves in the Lolo hunting zone during the last year. Fish and Game says the killings are necessary to help keep the number of elk high in the area of the Bitterroot Mountains near the Montana state line. Agency figures show the number of elk in the area was 16,000 in 1989, but was down to 2,100 in 2010. They say there were between 75 and 100 wolves in the zone as of late last year before the wolf hunting season started, and the department wants to cut that down to around 20 wolves. Despite a long wolf hunting and trapping season in the area, hunters not affiliated with the government have killed only 17 wolves since the season started last fall. Fish and Game Clearwater Region Supervisor Dave Cadwallader said, "It's just rugged, rough country, and sport harvest and trapping efforts remain very low, and that is the concern in that country. Obviously, it's one of our former premier elk herds, and that is not the case now." The bill pending, or a bill pending, in the Idaho legislature would spend $2 million of taxpayer money to pay wolf hunters around the state and create a wolf control board independent of Idaho Fish and Game. Documents obtained by the Associated Press state some of the double-walled, high-level radioactive waste tanks that have been installed at Hanford have significant construction flaws. After workers found one of the 28 giant waste tanks leaking in 2012, a Department of Energy contractor found six more tanks that shared the same defect as the tank that leaked. Energy Department Tank Farm Assistant Manager Tom Fletcher said Friday the agency is increasing the frequency of tank inspections from a 5-year cycle to a 3-year cycle. Democratic U.S. Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon said in a letter to Energy Secretary Ernest Moniz Friday, It is time for the department to stop hiding the ball and pretending that the situation at Hanford is being effectively managed. The citizens living along the banks of the Columbia River deserve to know the full story of what is happening with the Hanford tanks. Tom Carpenter of Hanford Challenge said, "These tanks have an engineered design life, and we are reaching the end. It's bad planning that they don't have new tanks up and running." The Moscow City Council tonight will hear a Parks Capital Projects Costs Forecast Model Report. The council will also be asked to amend city code to provide for effective communication between water purveyors, water customers, and backflow assembly testers for water supply cross connections. They will also be asked to rule on an appeal of a Board of Adjustment decision to deny a conditional use permit for a guest house on the Nathaniel Ely property at 318 South Howard Street. The council will also consider the future of a small piece of city-owned property, which now makes up a portion of the Cadillac Jack's parking lot and has been leased by Cadillac Jack's for a number of years for $50 a month. That lease expired last Friday. The Moscow City Council will meet tonight at 7 p.m. at City Hall. Well, that's it for the KRFP evening report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, there's a 50% chance of showers tonight, mainly after 4 a.m. towards dawn, otherwise cloudy, low 35. 60% chance of rain tomorrow, mainly after 10 a.m., cloudy, high 43. A 50% chance of rain Tuesday night, mostly cloudy, low 34. And a 90% chance of rain on Wednesday, high 43. 100% chance of rain Wednesday night, low 40, and a 90% chance of rain on Thursday, high 47. We're down to a 50% chance of rain Thursday night with a low of 34, 30% chance of rain on Friday, and partly sunny, high 46, mostly cloudy Friday night, low 34, and partly sunny on Saturday, high 48. Currently at the Pullman Moscow Regional Airport, 45 degrees, mostly cloudy. Well, thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Thanks to all who supported the Real Radio Dinner that was held Saturday night at the 1912 Center with its auction, and all those who helped set up, organize, and bid on auction items, or just attended the dinner. It was good to get the financial help and have some fun at the same time at KRFP. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on Radio Free Moscow, be sure to become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the Radio Free Moscow website to find out more ways to help Radio Free Moscow. I'm Lee Robartas. Have a good evening. Coming up next, news and opinions from the West Side with Eat the Airwaves, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio at 6:30. At 7:30, live in the studio, Climate Justice Forum. Stand by for more KRFP Moscow, Pullman, 90.3.